Sure.
Good morning. It's May 13th, about 10:20 in the Public Service Commission hearing room. We're here for an informal hearing on case number PU06421, Trans-Canada Keystone Pipeline. I'm Kevin Kramer, the portfolio holder for pipelines, and with me is fellow commissioner.
Tony Clark, good morning.
Good morning to everyone. I think since this isn't informal, we are both recording it and broadcasting it. We'll take appearances for anybody listening in, and for the record, we'll start with our staff.
Bill Benning, staff.
And Patrick Fawn, staff.
And representing Keystone TransCanada.
Thomas D. Kelsch, Kelsch Law Firm.
Dennis Stewart, Keystone.
Todd Cranda, Kelsch Law Firm.
Mike Koski of Tro Engineering, Keystone.
Buster Gray, Engineering and Construction Manager, Keystone.
And I'm Kevin Bishop, landowner.
Great. Thank you. Welcome to everyone. With that, I think the way to open, we do have a staff memo. Do we want to start with that, or do we want to have the company present the issues? So what do you think, Pat?
Does the commission want a summary of the filings that were made?
I think that's a fine idea.
Okay, then I guess I would recommend starting with the company.
Who from the company wants to start? Todd?
Good morning. Yeah, Commissioner Clark and Commissioner Kramer, appreciate the opportunity here this morning to present to you two motions that I think is on the agenda. The first one being, as I understand it, would be the identification of the route and approval of a route between milepost 168 and 170, which is inclusive of the Cheyenne River HDD and the north and south embankment areas. As the commission may remember, when the February 21st, 2008 order was issued, there was a route approved but for those two-mile segment. And the commission had asked that the company, Keystone, come back, present information, and I think it's under paragraph 2 of the ordering provisions of the order, pages 30 and 31, what the company intends to do and how it intends to do it. And so we have presented, as part of that motion, filed April 21, two affidavits with attachments, Mr. Buster Gray and Mr. Mike Koski, who are here to present any information and summarize that. I guess if it's okay with the commission, we'll turn to them when it's ready. But the second portion, which will follow up that discussion, would be the April 29th motion regarding five pending route refinements. And we have five specific landowners who we are working with diligently, trying to identify a specific route that would be acceptable and approved by this commission. And we do have a route on these five landowners, but there's some slight variations that we're looking at to accommodate different issues that can be addressed by Mr. Gray, who submitted the affidavit in support of that. And the five landowners are identified in our motion, and maps are also included. So if it's okay with the commission, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Buster Gray at this time, and we can talk about milepost 168 to 170 route. And I think at some point Mike Koski will jump in, and then, of course, our landowner who is present, Mr. Bishop, is involved in that portion of it, the north embankment of the that motion.
Great.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning, Buster.
In starting with the Cheyenne River, just in case, to go back a little of the background, and it was, if you recollect, during the September hearing, issues were brought forth by the commission and staff concerning the aesthetics of the Cheyenne River Valley. And although at that point in time we had proposed as an open cut and a conventional crossing of the valley, we did try to hastily get through with some geotechnical data to be able to make a confirmation to the commission that we could HDD the initially just the southern bank in the river, but then subsequently to that later the northern bank was requested as well, and we solicited that information. In doing such, we got some geotechnical work done, and we interfaced with a very reputable HDD contractor by the name of Michaels Construction out of Wisconsin, who actually is one of the more premier contractors that do this type of work. And they told us that they believed that it was feasible to HDD it. And certainly, I think we came back and made that commitment to the commission and went forward. And then later in the year, we submitted to Michaels actually a design drawing with the profile and the geotechnical data. And one point that they did not have at that time is the elevation differentials between the bluff, for lack of a better word, and the river bottom in it. But the first thing that occurred was when they submitted the commercial proposal, I guess on at least a per foot basis, it's 3 to 4 times more expensive than we've seen of typical crossings. And of course, I immediately went back to them to say, you know, I don't understand what's here. And they said, well, now that we've got the drawing with the elevation differences and the geotech that shows some rock and cobble issues in the south embankment, it's far more complex. And still related to the cost was that instead of using one drilling rig, it would require the use potentially of two, and we've done this in the past before, but you essentially have one set up on each end so that you can work back and forth rather than just working from one direction. But with that said in it, we also went and got the geotechnical work on the north embankment, and it's not near as complex as the south embankment, as I understand, but it's still not ideal either in it. And I think faced with those two items, which when we talk of difficulty in HDD is not just succeeding, but failures, not just not getting the pipe in, but issues that occur in the process like fracking out of drilling mud. And when you frack out drilling mud, although the bentonite is not toxic or anything to it, it is expected by most agencies that we clean it up. And as such, if we had a frack out in the forested areas, typically to get to it, you'd have to take trees out and things to go get to it. With all those said, coupled with all those items to it, I went back and tried to look at some alternative routes that I thought could achieve the commission's desires of the aesthetics of the valley, as well as give us more certainty of completion of our work, was the objective I went after in it. Then secondly to that was, I felt like the commission would require that if I brought this proposal forward, I would need concurrence of the affected landowners, and rightfully so. So I think trying to bring us up to date, we did all of those points. We've prepared drawings for submittal to the commission for your consideration, and probably what I would like to do, Mike Koski that's present with me, I would like, he's certainly more experienced in the geotechnical aspects of things, to maybe give you a little more description of the true concerns that we have. And because first blush would be, you might would say it's just commercial, but it's not just wholly commercial. Is if we fail, we would still have the same problem.
Well, and I appreciate that, Mike. But before you get started, I mean, you guys, you all realize, and it may be worth restating, our greatest concern is and was and is are the trees, and not so much the open cut across the river. And I mean, you all understand that, as you pointed out, the aesthetics, realizing that any open cut has some scar, even if it's just on prairie or, cropland or whatever, realizing that scar would be much, relieved much sooner than a tree scar. So I know we're all on that same page. And, of course, both Tony and I have been to this location both multiple times, previously and then specifically with regard to this particular project. So we're very familiar with the area as well as you speak. So appreciate that. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I guess what I'll cover is the contrast in technical feasibility between the two proposals. One I'll call the original longer drill of the Cheyenne River. It's approximately 3,500 feet. and the other a shorter alternative, the alternative that we're presenting to the commission today, which I'll call the shorter one, which is approximately 1,500 feet. With horizontal directional drilling, there's three characteristics of a crossing that really determine its feasibility. That's the length of the crossing, the diameter of the pipe being installed, and the geotechnical or soil conditions present. Those are the three big ones. There's a few minor ones that we consider when evaluating feasibility, but those are the three major ones. So in contrasting the two proposed alternatives, obviously one's shorter than the other. The shorter always the shorter a drill is always increases the likelihood of success, or what I should say is the unlikelihood of failure. Diameter, we can't do anything about it. It's the same one, same diameter in either alternative, of course. And then soil conditions. Both alternatives are at the same location, so they involve the same soils. Is it possible to pull up the profile?
That might be helpful to and just for edification here, I was going to say, let me go back to the original route. And I might here's a pointer there. Just to set kind of the terms of reference, this was the original proposal that when I say we have for the south embankment and the north embankment, the routes depicted by the green and the two HDDs would be the south embankment to the left and the north embankment to the right. To show you the proposed reroute, there you go. And this shows where, I wish they'd have left it blank, but they didn't, but just the HD of the Cheyenne River itself is right in the middle of the sure. Location, which would be much shorter, and the routes coming in and out are indeed just conventional construction. And then, Mike, I'll find the HDD drawing of the of the shorter crossing.
Yeah. Actually, if you can find the longer one first, do you have it?
Let me see. No, I don't. I'd have to go back to the original file.
Mike, you're looking at the first one?
Yeah.
I think it's Exhibit A of
yes, it is.
Mike, this is it. I do have it.
Oh, you do? Yeah, there it is. Okay.
Yeah, let me make it bigger for you. That is it. You want me to keep?
Yeah, can you keep that one up?
You want a little bigger anywhere?
Let's just focus on the profile.
All right.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you were going to.
Oh, you want to zoom into the profile?
No, it's all right. I'll proceed. So, this is the longer alternative, and what this figure depicts is the red here that I'm not doing a very good job of following with the pointer is the ground surface. The blue is the design profile of the drill, and what would happen is we call the entry point on this side. And the exit point on here, just a quick recap of directional drilling. Directional drilling involves drilling what we call a pilot hole, which is usually around 10 to 12-inch diameter hole from the entry point to the exit point. Once we accomplish the pilot hole, we enlarge that hole through a series of reaming passes where we put on successively larger reamers to create a hole that eventually is... We like to be 12 inches or so greater than the pipe that's being installed. So probably be two or three or possibly four, depending on the soil condition, reaming passes to get from the 10 or 12-inch pilot hole up to a 42-inch. And all through that process, we're using what we call mud. It's technically called drilling fluid, but it's mud. It's mostly water with bentonite mixed in. And what the mud's used for is it powers the downhole tools. The cutting heads are actually powered by pumping mud through them, and there's the hydraulic energy powers the holes for cutting soil and rock. but it's also to take the cuttings and bring them back to the rig where the mud is, cuttings are treated, removed from the mud, and the mud reused to the extent that it holds its properties. And so the soil conditions at this particular one, it's hard to see on here, but basically we've got 80, 90 feet up here of... All right. Of various types of soils. There's clays, there's silts, but of particular note and concern are cobble and boulder layers that are present in here and down here as well. Sorry, I'm going to hit you with the pointer here. And so what the drill then has to navigate here is on the entry side, it would come down through soils that are reasonably okay. We get into shale. We go through shale through here. And then at some point, we transition from shale into these cobble boulder type materials. Now, what happens with cobbles and boulders is you can imagine as you're cutting the hole larger, as the reamer goes by, you've got a cobble or a boulder sitting on top of the hole. Well, it's going to want to fall into that hole. And the problem with cobbles and boulders is that they're too heavy to be floated out with the mud. And it's compounded a bit in this case by the presence of this elevation difference, which I'll describe in a little more detail in a second. But basically that any materials have to wash back to the rig just because of the elevation. There's no opportunity to flush them out the other side. So that means bringing these cobbles and boulders all the way back, which is just not going to happen. So with those things laying in the hole there, if you do manage the next reaming pass that comes through, there's a good chance of it binding the next reaming pass and you get stuck. Or if you manage to get the hole open, then you're pulling your pipe in. Now your hole is full of these boulders and cobbles. You can get your pipe stuck in there. Technology in HDD has advanced tremendously over the last 20 years, but cobbles and boulders are still our number one problem. It used to be we couldn't do hard bedrock, but now we can handle just about any bedrock on the planet. The way that we've dealt with cobbles and boulders on other projects is we would install what we call an oversized casing, preferably on the entry side, where we sink a casing down to the good material through the cobbles and boulders, actually kind of manually excavate that casing, and then drill through it. But in this case, with the depth being 80 or 90 feet and being on the exit side, just makes it that much more complicated. And actually, I haven't done that for something that extensive. And I'm not aware of one that has been done. Now, the other feature about this, I mentioned there was three characteristics that really govern feasibility. But one of the more contributing factors is a difference in elevation between the entry and exit point. And certainly it's been done many times with elevation differences in this order of magnitude. However, combined with the soil types and this change in elevation, it sets up a real potential for the frack out or inadvertent return of drilling mud that Buster described a few minutes ago. And what you've got is, say, in this area, you have some boulders that drop down and kind of plug the hole. You've got this hydraulic head. The remainder of the hole from the exit point down to the blockage is full of drilling mud. And, of course, that's exerting a hydraulic pressure at this point. These types of soils with the boulder layers and gravel layers and even the fractured shale, there's significant potential for a pathway to the surface, which that hydraulic head can find that pathway and basically squirt mud up onto the surface. And will that happen? Can't say for sure that it will, but certainly the potential for it happening is greater here than would be typical. And as Buster described, is customary to clean that up when it comes out. And this corresponds with an area, a treed area up above, where the greatest potential for that to occur is present, plus the river itself. Now, if I can contrast this with the shorter alternative.
Which I hope I have.
Okay, well, we'll find out.
We didn't do a good job of naming these.
Should have named a shorter alternative.
Bill, that's, you're not listening.
Yeah, we need a committee to decide that one.
That's the north of that. This is that the whole crossing or is that the HDB?
Can't tell yet.
I don't think I've got it in the file. Got AB.
I'm sorry. I should have.
I'm sorry too.
It's in links, I think.
Do you have the hard copy?
Yeah, I sure do.
Because I've got the hard copy here, I can give the commissioner to that.
It's in our file.
Is he?
It's under Mike Koski's affidavit material. I think it would be, is it A?
Thank you.
All right, on this shorter alternative, you can see it's along the same alignment, so we're dealing with the same soils, but obviously we're not going as far up the south embankment where the problem really is. And now we've got a drill that encounters more acceptable soils over the shale. We're still going through shale at depth beneath the river, but that doesn't present a significant problem. And we're also, should we encounter any problematic soils on the entry side, which would now be on the south side of the river, we're just that much closer to the shale that having the option of installing a casing is far more technically feasible. So it gives us a lot more options. And then, of course, the shorter length, as I mentioned before, always increases the probability of success.
I was looking to see if I could find it, but I don't see it.
What Mike's just described is Exhibit B of his affidavit, so it is attached as part of the record.
So I guess to summarize then,
to get an overview of the entire proposed reroute, is that Exhibit E?
Now, Buster Gray's affidavit would be the original route plus the reroute, correct. And I think you do have that one, Buster.
Yeah, I'm going back.
So if you could put up Exhibit E.
That's the overall, and then the if you want to see the north embankment here, I'll give you a little more. This is the north embankment area, and. This is the route where we come up to work our way up through the area. It's actually on Mr. Bishop's property. Mm-hmm. And we work and weave our way down through the trees and the foliage to Mr. Bishop, I might would ask your help to it. We think that this would be less than 10 trees that would be removed, and potentially even less than that. It's hard for me to guarantee you that I can do less than that, but we believe that we can. I actually also, if I can find them on to here, these squares are showing just extra workspace that allows us places to put dirt where there's not trees. And if that's the odd shapes that you see on it, to work our way back to here. And I think one of the interesting things in it, and this point on this hill that's right here where this hand is depicted actually has a deer stand on top of it, mm-hmm. and it's a vantage point that's there. And the trees we do believe that we might have to take out in this area, you truly can't see them from the road or the valley because they're behind that particular hill in it. I was trying to think if there's any other particularities of this in it. I can take it a little closer.
You're depicting Exhibit F right now?
That's correct, on the north bank. But this, didn't like that. There it goes again. At that scale, the file's so large, it just takes it a moment to regenerate in it. The pink square that there's our cultural resource survey work, and we found some flakes at that spot, and we'll have to clear those by doing a little more cultural survey work, or the alternative would be to drop down like this and miss it. That's the limits of it to the south anyway. But this, it's going to take it a minute to regenerate at this size, but there's an opening between this cluster of trees and this kind of valley of trees that's right here, and there's an opening that's there that we believe we can get in and up and through.
So to boil it down, basically what you're doing is proposing traditional construction technologies where you're cutting, but you're just rerouting it in such a way that you're kind of dodging and weaving as many
That's correct.
Trees as possible.
That's correct. And actually, Mr. Bishop and I walked this and flagged it, and we actually flagged the various trees that we thought, there were two or three for certain. We were just absolutely certain we can't deal with. There were probably another four or five that we flagged that I do believe I could potentially save. I just can't guarantee you that I can at this point in it. But some of what you see in this photograph is and Mr. Bishop, it's that shrub brush or whatever that
the sumac
in it that you're seeing, and it's not trees anyway, as such. And
I consider it a noxious weed.
Yeah, you get that a lot.
I'm gonna see if this 100%. That see
it's
now
a
that
pretty weed in the fall though.
Huh? It is. It's very
pretty.
Pretty.
Weed in the fall.
Yeah, when it turns red.
But that's even blown in a little bit closer, and that's actually shadow there that you see. And then as I work my way up the hill, probably the nicest tree that's there that I'm virtually certain I can save is the one that you see where this particular hand is. And then as you work your way, and this is the deer stand that's right on top of the knob. And then this gets into these two or three trees right in here that I just. One of our problems is we can etch, we can save the tree initially, but if we cut enough roots in the next year, it's going to die. That's the, if I get too close.
Buster, why don't you pause right there? I think Kevin, did you have?
Oh, very good.
Right,
yeah.
Right about in here is one of those patches of sumac we were talking about, and that's maybe from. The road, there's maybe like a 30-foot window where you can just see the tops of the sumac.
And as we work away, there's actually it's almost a lane that's right down through this stretch. And it's, I would say it was 50 to 75 feet wide, Kevin, it's in there, that I think with a special crew I can walk in and excavate it and put that section of pipe in. And that's what you'll see. This is my permanent easement, but all the extra workspace is taken off the drawing here. And we're trying to put extra workspace where there's not treed areas. And then as we continue on up the back to the original route, we essentially come back into opening, and then you're back on the original route going up the hill. Then I have a similar drawing of the south embankment, but it ironically doesn't have the foliage that actually this one
does. Before you leave that, Buster,
certainly.
Mr. Bishop,
oh, please.
Would you pull the larger map up a little bit so that...
Or back at zooming.
The commissioners would have any questions of Mr. Bishop.
Let's see how far this will take us back.
My sense is, and I don't know if I'm speaking for the whole commission or not, but more important than whether the number is 10 trees or 12 or 15, I mean, exactly the number is, what is the visual impact as you drive? And so the big concern was where you are, cutting swaths out, and visually you can see these corridors and tunnels and things like that you just can't do anything with. I am interested in hearing. Well, Kevin, if
Mr.
you've
Bishop
got thoughts,
and
or,
Mr. Gray did walk this route where,
and kind of, and Mr. Gray, I don't know, it doesn't show it on that map, but he had another proposed route, and I didn't like that one. And I kind of laid this one out. We went up, and I put arrows in the ground and tied ribbons to them so we could get a visual through, and I don't think they would know it was there.
Sure.
If they...
And this is, I'm pulling up, I had a gentleman take some pictures for me, one of my survey crew personnel, and let me see how do I pull that up to where it's a Word, that's a Word document.
Hold it right there, Buster. The area, that narrow area right here off the road is like 30, 40 feet wide, and that's the only place, and it's a big hill, and it's just the only place on that road where you would possibly see that there was a pipeline going through.
And I don't know how fast these will go back, but picture A is actually from standing back away from the road. And then can y'all read the letters? I can't.
So you've got pictures, Buster, A, B, C, D.
Right.
Those are points where the photographs that you're going to show.
Right, and let's see how fast those will come
before
up.
Before you, okay. You
look. Oh, I'm sorry.
But also that road that's here is a county road, and that will be bored. And from what I understand, they'll start here and come up in here, right?
That's correct. That's the intent.
That's just a traditional boring.
That is right. Correct, just traditional road crossing. But let's see, because they do this perspective that you're asking about. This is from standing on the south side of the road looking towards the deer blind. And indeed, if you remember from the map, the route hooks around behind it. Hopefully these are in order. This is standing on the road at the road bore looking into that opening.
Yeah.
And I think the sumac shows up in this picture. Yes, sure. It's this thicket. As I remember, I believe we're coming right up through here. I believe it's this side, Kevin, and not this side.
Yep, I think you're right.
But this is the nice tree that I was talking about. I think I can avoid. It's just by getting to one side of it or not. Then this is just content. That's right in the middle of the sumac. Yeah. I don't know why he took that one.
Okay.
That stuff will regenerate itself faster than you wish, probably.
Like I said, it's a noxious weed.
And this is actually our root is kind of turning.
Plus your lime in the soil.
And this, you know, this is some of the boulders and things that we're talking about in it. Anyway.
I wondered if the presence of that gravel pit on the other side was indicative of some large rocks.
Mm-hmm. And this is these few trees that are behind the big knob that I do think I can minimize what I deal with. But once I get through there into this opening, I'm pretty much home free.
Kevin, is that all your land too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I think like Tony said, our biggest concern was the visual aspect in the scenic valley itself. On the other side of the hill, if the landowner's, you know, satisfied, and if you have a mitigation plan or don't, or whatever, I don't think that's a major concern to us. So I know that day Bill, Pat, and I were out there. Everything you're showing us is everything we talked about, pretty much. We kept saying, why don't they go over there?
Well, and really to mention to some of those in it with our Department of State permits and things to where we were, it's not as simple as it sounds in it. And this is actually looking at it from behind the deer blind towards the river, working the other way. And I would say, Commissioners, I don't know that I have anything else to present about this particular side. I can show you the south side's not near as complex as this one is, I think. But go back to it.
Unless the commissioner, Kevin, do you have anything else you want to comment on? Why don't we go ahead and go to the south embankment, at least cover it quickly, or same type of scenario, what the route looks like. And I think the exhibit that I'm looking at is G.
No. This is actually a Mr. Peterson and a Miss Hanson that are involved with this one. And this is coming in from the south. The original route is the blue line that's down here. And I think just because the clarity will be more, I'll expand this one and just maybe walk it from the south bluff down to the river. You can see it in more detail. Maybe I'll back away a little bit.
I guess for this property, we similarly have worked with the landowner, even though he's not here, he's concurred with this.
That is correct.
Route location.
Okay.
Do we have any documentation of that effect?
It's part of Exhibit F.
The concurrences.
Exhibit I.
Okay.
Are there. Actually, here, as we come down through, is I'll have to look, there may be one tree, but in essence, we don't clear any trees. And I thought I had a nice photograph. Even this particular tree we can work by yet. There's one at the turn that I was a little bit concerned about, but we believe we can.
Well, you guys have certainly taken our love of trees seriously. You're avoiding one at a time now. I appreciate that.
We finally listened, I would say. This is actually a little bit of scrub brush that's right there, not necessarily a large tree. And as we work our way down to the river, it's just the aerial's a large. This is we think we can, we'll just slightly scoot over enough to miss the trees that are there. We've had our civil survey done, and civil surveys out and makes those tweaks that I talk about. It's just not on these particular maps. And here at the directional drill site that would be here, there's a few trees right in here. But because this would be our drill side in it, we're in hopes we can flag off these trees and just maintain them and work around them that we would see in it. And then as you come into the river itself, well, that's actually in this drawing. That's in the drill, so there's nothing in the path that's there. And on the south side and actually on the north side as well, a landowner by the name of Olga Hansen and a landowner by the name of Peterson are the two landowners that we sought concurrence with this.
I noticed only one sign. Letter.
Do you see them? Kevin?
Excuse me? James Peterson sign. I mean, it's written as, I assume it's kind of a form letter, but it was written as, you know, we are the owners of the following property, but Mr. Peterson was the only signatory to the letter.
What was the difference with Olga? She wasn't a reroute, wasn't she?
There is a reroute on hers, but it's across open field.
Okay.
That's probably the difference.
But I did think McClure submitted that one as well.
I have the Peterson and the Bishop concurrence letters, but the older Hansen was a little different, and I forget what that was. We got an easement option.
That's correct. He took an option.
We didn't get a concurrence letter from her, but we have an option.
We took an option. I'm sorry. You are correct in that. And when I say an option, just being that if we changed the route and it was approved, we would go back and execute the easement with her. And we could certainly, I think, provide a copy of that option as such.
Would you like that, Commissioner?
I suppose. I mean, it just kind of caught my eye because the syntax of it is a little odd.
Yeah, I think that if you look at paragraph in the middle of the page of Buster's third page of this affidavit, it talks about Keystone has met with the following landowners. That was the Olga Hansen, James Peterson, Kevin Bishop. Executed an option for an easement from the following landowners accepting this route, and then the next paragraph, a concurrence letter to the alternate route by landowners Bishop and Peterson, which are attached to Exhibit I. So I did not include, and I will have to track down that option easement with Olga Hansen if you'd like me to file that.
Well, that would be fine. I'm just curious if on the April 18th letter signed by Mr. Peterson, Is he the owner of all three of those parcels of property that are listed? Or is Mrs. Hansen the owner of one of them?
Buster, if I show you, do you know the
details? Let me see if I do. Actually, with this portion of the reroute, by legal description, we entered a second tract of land owned by Mr. Peterson, and we had to go pull the title work to it, and
I don't have that portion of my file to be able to
say. I don't. I'm virtually certain this isn't Ms. Hansen's property. Okay. That it's actually another tract of land. On
you
the
understand north. My concern, though, just the nature of the letter stating we are the owners of the following property, and then the three listed, but then only having one signatory to it.
I think what it
was, neither should be I am the owner of this property or it's included some property from somebody else.
What the land agent did was took Mr. Bishop's letter and used that
I would guess so, but
and inserted the legal for Mr. Peterson.
Okay. If you could just double check that, I think that
we could file a clarification to it by all means.
Bishop was both he and his wife signed as the
owners. Right.
So I think that's why the landowner or the land agent was the same.
Sure.
But I'll clarify that for the commission.
And I noted staff recommended ensuring that all the agencies had a kind of a deadline to get back. And I suppose it would be the was it surface water, the health department? Who was it that testified? Who'd originally recommended?
What we did, commissioners, is as a result of the memo that we received from Pat Fawn, we noticed the deadline request So yesterday, upon receipt, I did send an email out to all agencies under 6906-0105, which includes the aeronautics, the governors, the ag, labor. There's like a list of 24 different agencies that are entitled to notice and officials. And so I did send a short notice. I copied Mr. Bennick and Mr. Vaughn with that so that they know. And we did set a deadline arbitrarily for Friday, this Friday at 5 p.m., with the understanding that next week, hopefully, we'll be looking more in-depth. And so written comments, if any, should be received by then. They have had notice of filing. At the time that I filed it with the commission, I gave them a formal notice, which I served by mail. And so every agency on that list received that notice. Now, we did discuss earlier before this meeting notice to the counties, and that's a different section. And so we'll be facilitating that, I believe, today. We'll discuss with staff how best to facilitate that and set a similar deadline for comment.
Thanks.
But I think that might address the concern over receiving comments and notice out, according to the memo.
Go ahead, Pat.
You mentioned the date that you gave them for the deadline.
Yes, I think this Friday at 5
Friday.
P.m.
Okay. Just to make sure that's okay.
Yeah. This digresses a little bit, but on our to-do list, I think we should look at some code cleanup, potentially, of agencies that are notified. I know I've heard from a number of agency heads who, and when we didn't have projects, it wasn't a big deal, but we've had a lot lately, and they keep getting these.
Pushing for quicker returns.
They keep getting these letters, and I mean, some of the agencies just don't have an interest and probably never will have an interest, and we should probably get them off of
there. There are even some mislabeled agencies.
Yeah.
There were a couple that.
I guess that brings up another question. Concerning the notices to the counties and cities, does the commission want us to notice all counties along the whole line or counties in these areas where there were changes, or what would the,
what
you prefer?
The rules are, but my personal preference is I don't know why a county that wasn't part of the reroute would care if have an interest.
Well, particularly with the Cheyenne River.
Well, I don't know why they care up in Nelson County.
We're doing it so we can give it to everybody if you would prefer, but we just thought we'd ask.
I think there's 8 counties that are affected by the entire route,
right.
So if we can notify the chairman of the board, I believe, the county auditor in each of those counties, that's 16 notices.
Well, and it's even a little, on a stream deal, you'd almost, a non-affected county like Cass would potentially have perhaps more of an interest than
an upstream,
Pembina or. So I don't know what the right answer is.
I guess if you want to be sure that you got it covered, you send it to all of them. That would be my correct answer.
And then you would include Cass, right? Because Cass really isn't on the list.
They're not one of
they're not on
counties.
The list.
Would you include Cass then?
I don't know. I mean, Grand Forks is downstream, and so is Trail, and so is I don't know how you.
So is like Winnipeg.
the only
don't need to know
they had been involved in the
yeah,
case.
That's why.
Well, Cass was, but the city of Fargo was.
And I guess everything that we've done is if within the corridor. So if there were any concerns that you would have heard as to the actual
I guess
corridor
I'd stick
route,
with the,
you know,
I'd stick
people
with
would have
notified.
So we'd like to make sure we're sure and we're limited to
I
the account.
I think you got it covered.
Okay. I think that concludes pretty much, unless anybody else has questions on our first portion with the Cheyenne and the milepost 168-170. What we'd like to do, if it's okay with the commission and staff, is move into the next portion of our motion that's pending, is the 5 pending route refinements, and these are 5 landowner-specific locations for routes. I don't know, Buster, if you have similar maps to show on these.
I do.
They are one affidavit that was filed. And it is Mr. Gray's affidavit in support of that April 29th, 2008 motion. And so if you wanted to turn to that material, and I guess, Mr. Bishop, you're more than welcome to sit through this, but it doesn't affect you, so, please feel free, whatever you want. But, Buster, if you want to go ahead and present an overview to the commission.
I will, and at the last informal hearing, what I had indicated to the commission is that far as a project's concerned, and I kind of find at this stage I'm in kind of a chicken and egg situation, is that I am working diligently with the remaining unacquired landowners that I can to resolve easement issues to voluntarily acquire right-of-way from those. And I have a number of things and a number of items that are in discussion right now that are not finalized, and I'd ask legal counsel and also if I file a request for an approval contingent upon landowner concurrence, could that possibly be considered by the commission? So in doing such, there are actually five locations here that I'd like to discuss that are part of this filing. And the first one is under Exhibit A, and it's a landowner by the name of Mr. Belanus. Gosh, the colors on that don't show up real good, but you'll
it's
see.
It's a smaller map, so it's Exhibit A of your packet. It might be more manageable if you wanted to look.
And Mr. Belanus had some concerns relative to the trees that you see in this location.
Just so I can...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just to clarify, so these are people who have not signed any easement so far, or they've signed but just not for this particular reroute?
They have not signed.
Okay, they've not signed at all.
Although I will tell you, Mr. Belena signed yesterday.
Okay.
In it. And it
Pending
your approval. That's correct. And Mr. Belanus's issues were the trees in these two locations on the northern end and the southern end. We made the slight route adjustment to the, this would be to the west.
This is in which, where is he located on the line?
Is Cavalier's the first county, correct? He's just north of Pembina River.
Okay, so this is way up by the Canadian border. Yes.
That's correct.
Where is his?
Approximately milepole 5, and he lives near here, but not on the property itself. His home is, I would say, off the map to the south, but we don't cross the property that his home's on. His major issues were the trees at this location, and this is actually up on top of a ridge, and he's concerned of wind erosion, and you can actually see some locations of wind erosion here on the maps that were here. We made an adjustment to move over. It's hard to see. Maybe you can see it on the hard copy, but this actually moving over cuts the width of the tree disturbance down. I also have indicated to him, even though the commission has, we've agreed to an 85-foot in wood lots, that once my construction people are on site, we will walk through this and try to see if there's some mechanism to either flag larger trees to leave them or selectively remove trees to be able to go through this location. At this location that's up on top of the ridge, where his greatest concern of wind erosion is I have agreed that I will bore that much like you would bore a road crossing. I've had to tell Mr. Belanus that when we do that, at the depth we are in the damaged root, he may still have some trees that die, a year or two down the road, but you never know. Sometimes you can do this and no problem at all to it, but we would make the effort to do that.
So a narrow ridge provides a reasonable
That's correct, because you're actually going underneath a hump, for lack of a better word. But then we would do that, and then his third concern was down at the southern end of his property, and there's a significant dry wash that runs through here. It doesn't have any water in it at this time, but actually that slight move over dramatically changes the size of that crossing
that
you would see it. And he wanted that done as well, and we've made those adjustments. As I've indicated here, Mr. Belanus did execute the easement, and we received it back yesterday, I believe, in it.
Well, it does bring it just a hair closer to some buildings down in the south end there. Are those occupied residences or?
As I remember, it was not, but I would need to confirm that. I believe the residence is here, and I'm not sure what that was.
And that's still outside of 500 feet, or they've signed the waiver?
I will confirm that. I think just looking at it, that would be greater than 500 feet. But let me confirm both of those, Commissioner, rather than speculating here.
Is that a mile, those section line miles?
That's a quarter section here.
Section line, so you'd be looking at half a mile from road to road there. So you'd have
Yeah, I think it would be greater than that, but I don't want to answer incorrectly, and I can check it quick enough in it. And follow up with that. Now, once I leave this one, the remainder are, for lack of a better word, still in discussion. We call this the Mrs. Letkeman, and this is when you see the milepost 14. That's from the Canadian border, and Miss Letkeman, you know, basically was just fundamentally opposed to our pipeline and mainly for environmental concerns and issues. And she came to us, and she actually took the initiative, landowners by the name of Goski, on this particular tract of land adjacent to her, and they actually live in California at this point in time. And she contacted them and asked them of their potential willingness to take the pipeline route, and they responded that they were willing in it. And she made the initial contact, our land manager has made the subsequent contact, and my understanding is, even though we've handled it by correspondence or mail, that the easement has been executed and is en route back to us, but we've not received it as of this. Now, this also affected a landowner by, I believe it's Bettendorf to the north, that we had to amend the easement to, and I believe it's a Carrington to the south that we were to be amending the easement with. And those are not problematic or an issue. We already had a voluntary easement from each.
I'm sorry, I may have missed it. This, again, is in which portion of the line?
Which county or?
Yeah.
This would be in Cavalier. Cavalier at the Pembina River. Okay. This would be. This would be in Pembina, wouldn't it?
Probably.
Oh, what's the one south?
Pembina.
Okay. I would see it. The third one that's a part of the filing is a Mr. Johansson, who is located near milepole 33 or 34 from the border. And, all of a sudden the counties are escaping me by name. Is it Nelson or Steele?
That might even be Walsh.
This is Walsh. I should know it by the WL and the landowner track number. Mr. Johansson's major concern was the coming through his agricultural area at this location. Sure. Secondly, there's a creek that runs through here, and it's the middle branch or the south branch of, I'm trying to say, the Park River. And his request was to try and get over closer to his property line. I met with Mr. Johansson and walked this particular route and have found that it is constructible. And secondly, this is a proposed pump station site that we have acquired 5 acres at this location where it comes back in. This is a landowner named Troft Gruben, and the landowner to the north that we would have to we're getting amending the easement. They have signed to the north and the south, and the Gimmels to the north to facilitate these reroutes. This one, Todd, if you can help me, the revised route, we've culturally surveyed it, we've civil surveyed it. to clear it on those basis. We have made a commercial offer now to Mr. Johansson and his legal counsel, and we are awaiting a response. I'm relatively optimistic this will close because Mr. Johansson, when I met with him, was quite pleased with the adjustment of the route. But it is not closed as we speak.
Is this a stream crossing that you have filed a drawing for in one of the other filings you made, the earlier filing?
I'm pretty sure that it is on an extra workspace at that stream crossing for a treed area.
Does that drawing that we have received reflect the new route?
I'm almost certain it would reflect the old route. As a matter of fact, until you mentioned it, it hadn't entered my mind. But I'm almost certain what you have is the old route. So we would again need to amend that. And in the matter of protocol, should I amend it and file it as quickly as I can, or how should I deal with that?
Well, I was thinking it could be an amendment to the previous filing that you made for that stream crossing. And so you wouldn't be making a new filing, just amending the existing filing. Is that okay?
That sounds great to me.
Mm-hmm. And that way it would tend, again, be contingent upon his concurrence, I guess, Mr. Johansson's in it. But you're correct. I'm virtually certain that's one of them.
Okay.
So. The fourth location is in Walsh County as well, and this is about 47 miles from the Canadian border. You may recollect from the hearings last year, Mr. Burris that testified concerning some cultural resource issues. This is Mr. Burris's track of land to the north of Mr. Cradiville, and that's who we're in discussions with here. Those mounds that he was concerned about, we did a reroute that actually is a red line here, and those mounds and his concerns are a little bit here to this area. We picked up, per Mr. Cradiville's request, to come over near this quarter section line, but we dropped south of the issue Mr. Burris had. Mr. Cradiville, I'll pull this up just a little bit. Mr. Cradiville and his wife, they're certainly opposed to the pipeline,
yes,
unequivocally in it. My conversations with Mr. Cradiville and his wife was that they are extremely opposed, but having the pipeline further from their residence and their farming operations that are in this area, at least working with them to try and compromise to a further location, they've indicated that at that they will have a discussion with us about a voluntary easement. At this point in time, we are in discussions with Mr. Cradiville, but if you're aware in this area, there are actually three or four landowners that we're trying to work in this area. So from a company perspective, I actually need to solve them all and not one. So I'm working with all of the landowners at this point in time to try and reach a resolution. So in essence here, the status of this is that we're in conversations. Mr. Cradiville knows that I will approve this route contingent upon your approval, and that working with the other landowners in this area, that if I can bring to conclusion, I will come back to him as well to conclude an easement. This requires an adjustment on Mr. Burris to the north and a Mr. Fingerson to the south, which we have all indications would not be a problem. The last one in the package is near Valley City in Barnes County. near landowners. Actually, the discussions are ongoing at this time with a landowner by the name of Mr. Holm, and he owns the tracts of land that is depicted here, the red being our original route. But two other landowners that are opposed to the project, Ms. Klein, Ms. Rabona Klein, and Mr. Richard Starkey, are just on each side of Interstate 94. Mr. Holm has made this request for this reroute, and we are hopeful that this particular reroute might allow us to have more constructive conversations with Ms. Klein and Mr. Starkey. We're hopeful of that, working through some legal counsel. These are probably the only two tracks that we don't have any direct dialogue going on at this point in time. But we are hopeful that this might allow us to make some movement to those particular tracts of land. The tract of land to the north of Mr. Spiker has to concur to this, and to the south, and you would think I wouldn't forget some of the names in it, but I have the gentleman to Mr. Bertram. It's actually on the map down here. That we believe we would be able to work arrangements with them to the north and the south. These are the pending reroutes. My personal belief is that in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I will successfully move these to resolution, or I will not, one of the two in it. And somebody in my business, I'm very optimistic that I can move these to a satisfactory conclusion. And I hope you can tell from the testimony I'm giving that I'm very personally and intimately involved in each of these at this point in time.
Are these the only 5 non-signers at this point?
No. Just to give you a little further summary to that, in Wash County, and I don't know where I would ask towards you. I'll certainly say names, but if you think that's inappropriate, I won't.
It doesn't matter.
But a Mr. Novak, a Mr. Sticka, and Mr. Kapp, 3 landowners in that area, that we are in interface with attorneys and actually with the CAPS as well, and we're trying to set up meetings. Hopefully, I have a meeting with one of the Mr. Kapp's brothers on Friday morning. I tentatively had a meeting tonight in Minneapolis with Mr. Sticka, but he had to cancel for some personal reasons. But I do think we've got a dialogue or an initiative going that has the chance of resolution. There's a landowner, Humphrey, at milepole 106 that has defaulted in the eminent domain process. Todd, and what I understand in default, it is essentially won't communicate with us, did not respond to the court, and it's just occasionally where you run into landowners like this in it. But I have instructed local legal counsel to make every effort to go sit down and not have to go through that process. But I would suggest to you at this point that destiny lies with that particular landowner. As you move southerly in Sargent County, Mr. Matthews, and he's a tenant on an adjacent tract to Ms. Kelly. I have a meeting with them Thursday afternoon in Fargo, and as a matter of fact, we have rerouted the pipeline there to facilitate some of Mr. Matthews' concerns, but we still have some. Or he still has some issues regarding our project that we're still trying to work through that the reroute didn't do. Lastly, the last track in North Dakota before you enter South Dakota is called Newark Company, And we actually went through eminent domain proceedings because they own the first track in South Dakota approximately 2 weeks ago with a judgment in South Dakota. I'm hopeful now that that judgment that's been rendered there, that the judgment was more favorable to the company, and I'm in hopes that with that knowledge that they will execute our easement to the North Dakota side of the border. But that's kind of a summary of all that are remaining, I'm intimately enough involved. If I successfully get these acquired, I may just ask you for an informal hearing to come back to tell you. But you know, we're respectively asking for these approvals based on contingents of us closing. If we cannot close, we would pursue eminent domain on the red routes.
Do you guys have anything else? If not, we've reached the Pat has something.
I don't think there was anything mentioned about, you know, having to do additional surveying for cultural resources in this on this 5 pending reroutes.
And actually on some of them we don't have access to the land to do them in it. But Pat, and I'm asking for maybe Tom or someone to help me. Maybe it's contingent on both of those things is the commission's approval and cultural resource concurrence by North Dakota SHPO, much like I showed the little red square on the Cheyenne River. We can conduct the surveys, and if we find something, we can investigate it and clear it, or we can reroute to avoid it. But actually, we've completed the cultural on Mr. Cratterville. He did give us permission, but we have not on the remainder.
And there's a programmatic agreement in place with among the signatories are North Dakota SHPO and the Department of State, both of which must concur on the agreement outlines what we need to do with respect to cultural resources, and we of course follow that agreement, and there's procedures for concurrence from both parties.
Well, and as far as timing now on these, we have to wait until deadline. Is it this Friday or next?
This Friday, Commissioner. Friday, 5 o'clock is the deadline for comment from agencies. My understanding is the commission was anticipating taking up a lot of these next week following the informal on Wednesday, the 21st.
We should like to move it along.
We would like to, too. Yeah, and I guess one last thing before you. We do have routes that you've already approved on these, and so what we're asking for is pending, like we've reached with Mr. Belenis on the easement acquisition and the approval of the survey is all okay, permission that these reroutes would be acceptable if those other things come together as well. Otherwise, we're still on our original route that you've issued in the order of February 21.
I don't have a concern of that. Do you have proposed language?
We will be submitting something. We will be trying to submit something before next Wednesday.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone. That concludes the informal. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, okay. Thanks for coming.
You guys want to stay a couple of minutes and
chat?
That's
right.
Yeah, I want to show.
Can we get off? Offline.
I made a disc.
Oh,
it's
you.
Actually probably 80 pages.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
Yep. Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming all this way.
Oh. I can sleep.